I'd like to open up this afternoon to Deuteronomy 14. I'm going to take a look at a section here in Deuteronomy 14 of a physical application, and we'll try to apply a spiritual intent to this. If you want to hold your tomatoes until later to throw, that's fine. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. He says, "You shall surely tithe all the increase of your grain of the field, of the grain that the field produces year by year. And you shall eat it before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil, the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always." So one of the ways that we're told that we can learn to fear God is by tithing, and then spending that tithing in the place in where God chooses to place his name. Which I think is interesting that we're learning to fear God not just by saving it, but also by spending it, which I think is interesting. Now, just to carry on to finish what he's saying here in verse 24, he says, "But if the journey is too long for you so that you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money, take the money in your hand, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep or new wine or similar drink. For whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household." So we're commanded to keep this tithe, and we're commanded to use that tithe and to spend that tithe on what our heart desires. Now, just reference for a moment, if we turn over to Deuteronomy 16, it's just one page over in my Bible. Deuteronomy 16, verse 16, it says, "Three times a year all of the males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed." So sometimes we'll read that section, Deuteronomy 14, and we only want to apply it to the Feast of Tabernacles. But all it says is when you go to the place that the Lord God chooses to place his name. And here in Deuteronomy 16, it says the same thing, but it adds all three seasons. Now, clearly, he's not saying that we only have to go before God on those three holy days, and the rest of the holy days we don't have to do that. So we have historically always said that it's more three seasons. Justin pointed that out for me in Luke 2. You won't have to turn there when it says that Jesus' family was going up to Jerusalem for Passover. They went up to Jerusalem. They went up to the place where God chose to place his name. So, you know, we're to tithe on the physical increase that we're given. How do we connect that spiritually? You know, when we do things physically, for example, in a couple of weeks, we're going to put all the leavening out of our house. And we're going to spend a week eating unleavened bread. It's a very physical act, but it pictures us putting sin out of our lives and putting in the true bread, the bread of Jesus Christ. We're going to go to Passover and we're going to partake of the flesh and the blood of Jesus Christ. Now, we don't physically do that. We eat of the unleavened bread and we drink of the wine. And it's a very physical thing that we do that has a spiritual application. So what is the spiritual application to tithing and then spending those tithes? Well, the other things I want to look at is, do we have an increase spiritually as we do physically? Let's just turn over to James 1. Very familiar section, James 1. No new truth today. Sorry if that's what you came here for. James 1 and verse 2, he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." So we go through trials and we go through struggles, and it produces something. Produces, in this example, the testing of your faith produces patience. So there's an increase. You go through this trial and you come out on the other side, hopefully with an increase of some spiritual attribute, whether it be patience in this example. Sometimes we go through situations and we come out the other side having a better understanding of empathy, a better understanding of compassion, a better understanding of suffering, right? Let's just see what Christ has to say in John 15. Christ points out something for us here in John 15. It's very similar. John 15 and verse 1, Jesus Christ speaking, he says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and that every branch that bears fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. So God is pruning us. He's working with us for the purpose of having an increase, for the purpose of having more fruit. Just like we work and have a physical increase in our life, God is trying to give us a spiritual increase as well. Now, Justin mentioned about the spring holy days, and we're coming up on the spring holy days, and we're going to start to look at ourselves, and we're going to start to take stock in who we are. And a lot of times, people will look at Passover as a reset button and say, well, I made a lot of mistakes this year, and even though I had to ask for forgiveness, I really, really don't get clean until Passover. Once Passover hits, reset button, I can go mess up again for another year. And just as long as I come back next year, everything will be okay. That's not necessarily true. When we partake of the Passover, we are taking the blood and the body of Jesus Christ. Well, we are reaffirming our commitment to God. And in doing so, we inspect ourselves. We look at ourselves, the things that we need to change, the things that we need to fix in our life. But we also need to understand that over the same time period of that year, that we have a spiritual increase. And we need to take stock of that spiritual increase. Year over year, we need to be making sure that we grow closer and closer to God, closer and closer to being like Jesus Christ. And we don't do that by looking at our faults. We don't do that by taking stock in the things that we've done wrong. We do that by looking at how we act, how we react. Where is the spiritual growth? Is there spiritual growth? We need to understand that increase is there, and we need to make sure that we see that there's an increase there. What increase has God given you, and should we be tithing on that spiritual increase? Should we be setting aside a tenth, a tithe of our spiritual increase like we do physically? Well, to understand that, I think we have to have a very basic understanding of the tithe. Tithe is a tenth. Right? It's a tenth of your increase. In Deuteronomy 14, it's explaining that we keep that in, we set apart that increase so that we will be able to go up into the feast, so that we're able to go up and partake of that increase at the feast. When you really boil down tithes, it's preparatory by nature. It's a preparation for the holy days. It's a preparation for preaching the gospel. It's a preparation for taking care of others. If we just look as an example in Deuteronomy 14, verse 28, we've referred to this as a third tithe. It says, At the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of the year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are within your gates may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands which you have done. You know, in order to be able to do that, you have to prepare. You're setting that aside. You're setting that increase aside. It says, at the end of every third year, bring out the tithe of your produce of that year. You know, we don't wait until October. I'm hoping that we don't wait until October or September and then go, I need money for feast. I'm not going to be able to do anything this year because I totally forgot about it. Just as an aside, a friend of mine years ago, he calls me 3 or 4 days before the feast, and I think I've shared this story with some of you. He calls me 3 or 4 days before the feast, and he says, man, Satan's really after me this year. Satan is just beating me down. So why so? He says, I'm not going to be able to go to feast. Well, why not? Well, I have no money. Well, you worked all year, right? Yeah, I've worked the whole time. Did you not set aside the tithe? No, I didn't set aside a tithe. That Satan, he's after me. Satan's been really beating me up. He didn't prepare. He didn't prepare by following God's commandment of setting aside that tithe. It is preparatory. What are we preparing for? Physically, we set aside that tithe to partake of God's holy days, partake of the feast. Spiritually, what are we preparing for? I want to look at two things today that we need to be mindful of, that we should be preparing for. We'll start over Revelations 1 and verse 5. Revelation 1 and verse 5. It says, "To him who loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood, and has made us kings and priests to his God and Father, and to him be the glory and dominion forever and ever." My Bible says a kingdom of priests. But we're being made into kings and priests. God's forming us. He's shaping us. He's given us that increase. What's the purpose of us being priests? Is it because we're so great and that God needs us to glorify him? You think of a priest today, a priest's job is to help edify the body. It's to help work with the body. It's supposed to help lead and set the example. If we turn over to 1 Peter 2 and verse 9, very similar. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9 says, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." A royal priesthood, a holy nation. There's going to come a time in the future when we will be given the opportunity to help people, to work with people, to help people understand. When it says in Deuteronomy that we store that tithe, that we can spend it on what your heart desires. If we look at it as from a spiritual standpoint, if we're setting aside a spiritual tithe, of the spiritual lessons that we learn in this life through the trials and the struggles that we go through. And then in the future, we will be able to spend that to help people. Spend that on what it says our heart desires. Well, what does our heart desire? You know, now, I'm going to tell you, I really desire a hot tub at feasts. I like having a hot tub, right? I like having a nice house or a nice hotel. I like having nice meals. Now, that's not the only thing my heart desires, but that is something that I think about when I'm setting aside tithe. Spiritually, what does our heart desire? Let's turn over to 1 Timothy, because let's look at what God's heart desires, what God desires. 1 Timothy 2. Timothy 2 and verse 3 says, "For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth of God." He desires that all men be saved. So let me ask you, are we able to freely spend on whatever our heart desires spiritually today? Are we able to take the lessons that we learn through the trials and the struggles and the increase that God gives us in our spiritual life, are we able to spend that freely today? I'm suggesting to you that we can't. We're limited. Now, we can be examples and we can be lights, and we're supposed to be. But not everybody's called. Not everybody has the calling of God. Not everyone's mind has been opened. Not everyone is receiving that calling today. So you're limited from the standpoint that you can be an example, but we can't go out there and save everyone today. But there will come a time in the future where we will be able to work with people, and every person we work with will have the opportunity and their minds open to be saved. We'll be able to freely spend the spiritual gifts that God has given us. You know, at work, recently we acquired this business that does concrete countertops. It's an artisan mix. And I've spent the last 4 or 5 weeks trying to learn how to do concrete countertops, right? Because I don't want to make it if I don't know what it's for. I need to know what it's about, right? To be able to really get into it. And it's been interesting because we've had trainings and we've had these artists from all over the country come in to do different things. And these guys are amazing. They're absolutely unbelievable, the work that they do. But what's funny is when I'm in the shop and I'm making a concrete countertop, there are these people that come over and go, you know what? That would look really, really good if you made it fluorescent orange. I think that would, that'd really set it off. And they walk away. And 10 minutes later, someone will come up and go, you know, if you paint flames on that, man, that'd really be nice. I had one guy tell me that if you just replace the sand with, well, we have a product called Glowworm. It's like a, it's a powder that glows, right? He's like, just replace the sand with that, and then your countertop will glow. That's what you got to do. And I'm getting all this advice from people that really don't know what they're talking about. There is a tremendous difference when the artisan comes over, because the artisan walks over and puts a glove on and puts their hand in the mix and says, you know, Matt, if you do this, it's going to help your water retention and it's going to help with your strength. And try this finish and do this thing, right? And it carries weight because they've done it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And what they're telling me is not some suggestion that may or may not work out. What they're giving me is advice that has been proven through their experiences. When the time comes that we'll be able to spend freely the spiritual gifts that we've been given to the people that are trying to create and build a relationship with God, it's going to carry more weight because we've gone through it, because we've experienced it, because we've gone through the trials. You know, one of the things, this is just an aside, it's, we should be learning how to do that with each other now. If we can't share our trials and experiences with each other now, how are we going to do it in the future? If our pride gets in the way of sharing an embarrassing story or sharing an embarrassing lesson, how are we going to do that in the future? It's something that we need to talk more about, but that's just an aside. But in the future, when we're helping people, we'll be able to draw on those experiences. We'll be able to show that through our example, through what we've lived through, you can make it. You can change. You can do these things. If we turn over to Isaiah 30, Isaiah 30 and verse 22. So I'll start in verse 19. It says, for the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem, and you shall weep no more. He will be very gracious to you at the sound of your cry. When he hears it, he will answer you. And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore. But your eyes shall see your teachers. Your ears shall hear the word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it, whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left. We're going to have the opportunity to help people, to help lead people into a relationship with God. And we need to learn the lessons that we're learning today, and we need to stockpile that. We need to take a tithe of that lesson. That doesn't mean that don't use it in this life, because it's spiritual. It's not going to fall apart, right? It says to store up treasures in heaven. That doesn't mean that you can't use those treasures today. They're spiritual. You can use them today and tomorrow, right? But we will get to use those experiences and those examples to help people. And what I want to do now is turn over to Colossians 2. I want to move into a second point here. Colossians 2. In verse 16, he says, so let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbath, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substances of Christ. And we don't always think about the holy days as being prophetic, but they are a shadow of things to come. They're prophetic in that God says these are the things that are going to happen, and they're off in the future. And we think of Feast of Tabernacles for an example. That's not happened yet. It's off in the future. It's a promise that's made, and we're rehearsing it today, but it's prophetic in nature in that it's been promised and it's coming. With that in mind, let's turn over to Daniel 7. Daniel 7 and verse 23. If I can find it. It's not my intention today to go through to Daniel 7 and explain who's what and when and how, but Daniel 7, and we'll start in verse 24. It says, then the 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from the kingdom, and shall rise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be different from the first ones, and he shall subdue 3 kings, and he shall speak pompous words against the Most High. He shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and he shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints will be given into his hands for time, times, and half a time. When we're preparing for the holy days, when we are preparing physically for the things that we're going to do over the next 6-8 months in the spring holy days and the fall holy days, spiritually, we should also be preparing for those times. And we look at the good times and we think about the good times, but sometimes we read ourselves out of the fact that the saints shall be given into his hands and that the saints shall be persecuted. Daniel's saying it right here. We're preparing for the good times. Are we preparing for the trouble? Are we preparing for what Daniel says here is persecution of the saints? A lot of times we read ourselves out of that. We will read scriptures that talk about the end time and we'll say, well, place of safety, that's 1,000 years from now, 100 years from now. The apostles were very clear that they had a zeal, but they also had a sense of urgency. They talked like it was just right around the corner. Have we lost that somewhat? Let's turn over to what Jesus says in Matthew 24. Again, very, very familiar passage in Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 7, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there'll be famines, pestilence, earthquakes in various places, and all these are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated for all nations by my name's sake. And then many will be offended and betray one another and will hate one another. And many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. Do we read ourselves out of that? He says that there will be tribulation and that we will be hated and that we will be killed. Now we can go further on in what Christ is saying here, and he says, verse 15, therefore when you see abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let him who is on the housetop not go down or take anything out of the house, and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant in those days and the nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight may not be on the winter, but not be in winter and on the Sabbath. God will intervene. But Daniel says that we're going to go through part of it. Christ here says that there will be some sort of intervention there, but that's after nations rise against nations and that there's tribulations and that people will be killed. We turn over to Revelation 14. Revelation 14 and verse 12. He says, here's the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus Christ. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. You know, there's coming a time of tribulation. There's coming a time of great suffering. There's coming a time of unrest. Are we stockpiling the spiritual lessons that we're learning today to be able to get through those times? Are we preparing for those times as we prepare for the feast, as we prepare for the holy days? Are we spiritually preparing for that? Because, again, I'm guilty of skipping a lot of the prophecies that talk about the day of the Lord because I read myself out of it. I look to the other side of what's going to happen. I look to the other side and say, at the end, it's all going to be great and things are going to be wonderful. And that's true. But there's a period, you know, what's the saying? It's darkest before the morning, right? It's going to get pretty bad. Do we think about that when we're preparing? When we prepare for what's coming in the future? So I want to go back to learning to fear God. So God says we're preparing with our tithe to be able to spend for the feasts, be able to spend for the holy days. How does that teach us to learn to fear God on a spiritual level? I didn't read what Daniel's reaction was, but I want to go back to Daniel. You don't have to turn there if you'd like, but Daniel 7, after giving this vision and the vision is interpreted, Daniel says in verse 28 of chapter 7, he says, "This is the end of the account, but as for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me and my countenance changed." Then in chapter 8, there's another vision, and it's interpreted again. And at the end of chapter 8, in verse 27, it says, "And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. Afterwards, I arose and went about the king's business." It's revealed to Daniel what's going to happen in the end. It was revealed to Daniel these interpretations, these visions of the end time. And he's sick and he's fainting because there's a very real emotional connection that happens there. Again, I'm guilty of reading those same things and just glossing right over top of them and not thinking anything of them, going, yep, it's going to be bad. It stinks for those people. When we read those things, do we have a healthy amount of fear? When we read that the saints will be persecuted and that there'll be tribulation, do we have a healthy amount of fear there? Now, let me give you an example of fear for a minute, because I want us to understand how fear works sometimes. I'm gonna tell a story, a series of stories. Okay. The year's like 2002. I'm at Jekyll Island. Justin was there with me. We had 10 guys in a house on the beach at Jekyll Island for feast. The Crow's Nest. Great house. Great house. And all of us guys are in the age group of 16 to 26. And we took it very serious when it says, spend it on what your heart desires. And my heart desired Nerf guns. Okay? And the hearts of several of the gentlemen with me all desired Nerf guns. So we had all these Nerf guns strapped on, and we had these epic Nerf gun battles. And there were automatic Nerf guns and semi-automatic Nerf guns, and it just... this is a great, great time. Well, there was also this young lady there that two of us had our eye on. And one afternoon, one evening, after hours, we decide, let's go hang out with said young lady. We didn't really think it through because we were, I think, 16 at the time and not very smart. So we go to call on said lady in flip-flops and shorts and about six Nerf guns. Strapped on. This is going to be great. Knock on the door. We're high-fiving. This is going to be awesome. And opening the door is a mountain of a man named Jerry Bernhauser. And both of us are like, okay. I mean, flip-flops. You got to picture it. I mean, just when I say that I feared Jerry that day, I feared safety. My safety was in peril. Okay? Because I didn't know what was about to happen. There was a very tangible amount of fear in that moment. Now let's fast forward. That was my first recollection, like first real memory of Jerry. Now, let's fast forward a couple of years. I don't know. 3 years at this point? We'll fast forward 3 years. And now, said young lady is hopefully going to be my wife. And Jerry and I are in the van and we're headed to Home Depot because Justin and Rachel were getting married and we were setting up and helping do stuff for the reception. And I asked Jerry, what do I have to do to marry your daughter? And he's in the seat, and he just looks over. And we just keep driving to Home Depot. And we get to Home Depot, and we walk around to Home Depot. And when I tell you there was a very tangible amount of fear, but now it was different. Because I wasn't physically afraid of Jerry. Now I was afraid of what Jerry could do to my future. Jerry held in his hands my future at that moment. It was fear, but it was a different type of fear. I wasn't physically afraid. Now I was emotionally afraid. He did say yes, by the way. He claims he didn't hear me, and I had to ask him a second time. We're not sure, okay? He says he didn't. I got to believe him, but when the day comes, I might pull that move on purpose. I'm just going to act like I didn't hear it. But anyway, so now let's fast forward 14 years. I still fear Jerry, but it's totally different. It's completely different. Because now I have a relationship with Jerry, and we're very close, and he's very much my father, and he's very much one of my best friends. The fear I have for him now is a fear of letting him down, of a fear of not being able to live up to expectations. It's a very different fear. It's no longer I'm afraid of him. Now it's I have very big shoes to fill. He set an amazing example as a father and as a grandfather, as a husband. And I have to follow up that. That's not a very easy thing to do, okay? I wish he would mess up a little more often. That would probably take a little pressure off, right? But it's a very different type of fear, but it's still fear. But now it's a fear of love and respect, of not wanting to let someone down, not wanting to make a mistake, right? Now let's go back. When we think about preparing for what's coming ahead, it's okay to start with fear of, I'm afraid of what's going to physically happen to me. But that will change. I think all of us at one point or another feared God for what he could do to us. And then we fear God for what he could do to the future for us. Do we fear God because we don't want to let him down? Is that the fear that we learn? When it says in Revelation that the patience and the faith of the saints is shown by those who give up their life, are we prepared to give up our life? Have we been stockpiling those spiritual lessons and tithing the spiritual increase? And are we prepared to learn the fear of God and to go through what we need to go through and do whatever it is we have to do? Because I can't promise you that it's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next year. I can't promise you that you're going to die peacefully before the tribulation or die during the tribulation. I can't promise you any of those things. But I can promise you, because God promised us, that it's going to happen. Are we preparing for that? We prepare physically for the feast. Are we preparing spiritually for what the feasts represent? Do we think about it that way? How do we learn to fear God? By tithing and spending that tithe? By setting aside a spiritual increase that God has given us to spend it on what our heart and God's heart desires in the future, of helping people, of living up to the example that Jesus Christ set, to try to have that same example, to be able to go through what God has coming. You know, that's not the only thing that we can learn from Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. There's many ways that we can learn to fear God. One of the ways that I want us to think about is what is happening and what is coming. Are we preparing for it as we do a feast? I'm looking forward to the feast this year. I'm looking forward to the spring holy days this year, and we're preparing for it. But we should also be preparing for what those days picture, for what's coming in the future.